This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Welcome to Place to Be Nation's comprehensive look at the news and happenings throughout today's wrestling universe. Hosts JT Rosero, Steve Willey, and Nate Milton are joined by insiders and guests to take you around the wrestling world on PTBN's Clotheslines and Headlines. Take it away, boys. It's Lariat time.
And extra, extra. We all are fired. I got it like that. Tuck my neck in and
you know good and well that you don't want a problem like that. You gonna make someone a Place to Be Nation proudly presents Clotheslines and Headlines, episode number 13. This is gonna be a very lucky episode this week, people. Got a lot of stuff to get into, a lot of hot topics to talk about. But before we get to any of that, we should probably introduce who we are. I am one of your faithful hosts, the Godfather Nate Milton, joined as always by the guy that classes this place up a bit, the one and only brother Steve Willey. Steve, how are you doing this week, my friend?
Well, I'm feeling a little better now. Like, no one's ever said that about me at my home or my workplace. So, hey, I'll take it. I'll class this joint up.
All right. And that's two of the Musketeers, but we're missing our third Musketeer. Brother JR is on assignment. I believe he's still getting over the loss of Jerry Lawler and Lita on the pre-show. Something we're all dealing with one day at a time, folks. But we can't let that stop the show. We had to bring in somebody to fill in this week, and we went to the vast, copious, if you will, overflowing Place to Be Nation bench, and got a good one. We got an all-star this week, folks. Friend of the program, all-around great guy. He's so famous, he's infamous. Glenn Butler. Brother Glenn, how you doing this week, my man?
I am well, Brother Nate. Thank you so much for that warm welcome. I'm always glad to be here. Whenever JT is on assignment, I am glad to fill in, because here at Clotheslines and Headlines, much like WWE, we have to have a three-plus man booth.
Yes, yes, we do. That's what works. I mean, if it worked for Nitro, it can work for anybody.
And it works so great for Nitro. Which one of us was supposed to bring the dog?
I was going to say, I am the dog.
Okay,
I am Pepe. Hey, baby.
So we got Pepe. We got, I guess I'll be a Tony Schiavone. We got the Georgia connection.
All right. Well, I guess it makes me Bobby, which is a lot to live up to. Thanks, guys.
Well, enough of the pleasantries. We have a lot to get into this week. Of course, we're going to recap what happened with WWE at TLC. We're going to have a preview for Roadblock. We're going to get into some ROH. Some Lucha Underground, some Cruiserweight action, so much more. There's so much business we have to take care of. But you know what, guys? That is big business. There's some other things in this world, in this land that we live in, that is not as big, is not as monumental. That would probably be under the heading, under the classification of small business. And when you have a small business, you're a businessman, businesswoman, you need somebody that looks out for you, looks out for the little guy or girl. And we have a new one in this country. And Brother Glenn, I know you wanted to speak about America's newest advocate for small businesses.
Yeah, well, as a proud resident of the great state of Connecticut, I have been able to wake up fresh every single morning ever since Election Day 2010, especially after Election Day 2012. Secure and safe in the knowledge that I am not represented by a McMahon at any level of government. And now it seems that dream is being torn asunder. As apparently Linda McMahon herself, she with the best theme song among the McMahon family, is going to be the administrator of the Small Business Administration. For the upcoming administration, which is just perfect, isn't it? You know, in something that's going to be staffed by every two-bit flunky that anyone can find that'll take a job. not to come out too hot, but...
any bored billionaire.
Yeah, exactly. Any friend of the big dog.
Hey, man, just goes to show you, you get what you pay for. That's money well spent. The McMahons donated a reported $6 million to the Trump campaign or to a pro-Trump super PAC, which is probably even more awesome than the Wolf PAC. But you probably shouldn't turn your back on them either. But yeah, so you get what you pay for. Like I'm not surprised. It did kind of catch my attention as I saw the headline, but it doesn't surprise me because if there's anything that we know Donald Trump values above all else, it is loyalty. He is down for those who are down for him. And the McMahons have been down with Donald Trump for many, many years.
I mean, Vince McMahon shaved his head for him.
Yeah, that's the ultimate sacrifice in Donald Trump's eyes.
Well, that's the thing he wants, right? Is for people to lay low before him.
I can feel the defeat in your voice, Glenn.
Oh, I've been trying to contain it for a month, dude.
Do you think this benefits, like, you more, though, Glenn? Like, the fact that she is out of Connecticut?
Well, she wasn't going to run for anything again. My brother and I did a podcast before the Iowa caucus, and we talked about who else from the WWE Hall of Fame would make a better presidential candidate than Donald Trump. Because remember when that was real funny, guys? And we were talking a little bit about local Connecticut politics, too, and we mentioned, you know, someone started some rumor that Linda was going to run for Senate again, which obviously she wasn't, because obviously there wasn't any way she was going to win. It was a little less obvious the two times she lost, even though she lost rather convincingly. And I reflected at the time that she could have been governor. Like, if she was actually interested in being governor, those races were a lot closer. So if she had any interest in, like, doing the actual business of governing, she could have gotten in there. Now, I don't know what her plans and goals are for the Small Business Administration, but...
Does she have experience, like, in Connecticut, does she have experience with small businesses? And would you classify the WWE as a small business?
Hell no! Are you kidding me?
Well, they tried to spin it, like, Trump tried to spin it that she helped grow it from 13 people back in the day, you know, when it was, you know, Vince Jr. herself, probably like Howard Finkel, sitting around the pool. And now it's, you know, more than 800 employees and it's, you know, publicly traded.
That's the sort of writing in articles about this that those of us who are like ensconced in wrestling and know a whole lot about this kind of niche subject can kind of pick apart, like, when was WWE a modest 13 person operation? Like, back when it was fucking Vince Sr. and Toots?
Yeah.
You know, Linda doesn't have a time machine. I don't think she was around at that point.
See, now I just want Linda to have to, you know, speak about how she grew this company, but just instead of giving actual facts, because I don't think there are many, just use storylines. And there was a time when my small struggling business was going through an invasion from outside invaders. And there was WCW and ECW. And then there was another time when my daughter was abducted. And it turned out my own husband was the higher power. It was him all along.
There was a time when an entirely unqualified redneck was the CEO of the company. And I had to take it back and grow it again.
And don't get me started on Ric Flair as general manager.
And you want to talk about deplorables. If Hillary wanted to talk about it, you've never seen Balls Mahoney in the Sandman.
You know what, Glenn? This is getting better now. This is getting better.
Really? Is it really?
It's all about silver linings, man. Silver linings.
Oh, Glenn, God.
As someone who is familiar with the intricacies of Connecticut politics, would Linda McMahon have made a better president than Donald Trump?
there are very few people who wouldn't. Like, if you're accepting people like literally Putin, there are very few people. Oh, God. Okay. The signature feature of Trump that is discombobulating so many people, aside from the fact that he ran for and won the presidency on a platform of naked white supremacy, the thing that's discombobulating a lot of people is that he is so fickle, right? And he turns on a dime. He is extremely volatile emotionally, and his emotions guide him in a volatile way. That's the sort of thing that either terrifies you because complex international relations depend on consistency and the ability to know what you're doing, or makes you think, well, he just tells it like it is. Mm. I don't mean to use a southern accent there. It's not a regional thing. But,
yeah, you and your northern elites, Glenn.
Yeah, sorry, like sorry. Yes. So, contrasting directly with Linda, she's the sort of person whom I would disagree with on quite a lot, but I think she's fundamentally sane.
Yeah.
I can say that much.
And shout out to a friend of the program, Dennis Nunez, who I know listens, just posted a kayfabe news article that with the headline, Linda McMahon betrays Vince by aligning with foe who shaved his head. Swerve.
Oh, that's brilliant. That is brilliant. You know what'll get your mind off of politics, though, Glenn?
Yeah, let's.
Good music, man. Like, are you a fan of TLC?
Sure.
Because I think one of their best songs was a little ditty called What About Your Friends, Glenn. And it had the great line, what about your friends? Will they stand their ground? Will they let you down again? What about your friends? Are they going to be low down? Will they ever be around, or will they turn their backs on you? And while those lyrics were probably written about some scandalous skeezer back in Atlanta around the early 90s, they could easily have applied to one James Ellsworth this past Sunday at TLC.
Hmm. Well, and if you're going to go with that metaphor, after Ellsworth turning on Dean Ambrose, I think that the only retribution is not beating up James Ellsworth. I think Dean needs to go to James Ellsworth's house and burn that thing down.
Yes. Like that'll be the match at the Royal Rumble. It'll be Ellsworth and AJ versus Dean Ambrose and Andre Rison. In an inferno match.
In an inferno match, yep.
Classic.
Oh, man. But yes, the WWE's TLC pay-per-view, the SmackDown-only branded show, took place from Dallas, Texas, at the American Airlines Center this past Sunday. And let's talk about it, fellas. Let's give a quick little recap and some thoughts on the card. I guess, Steve, my big issue with this show is not that it wasn't good. It's just two things. One, I think all of these in-between intermediate shows that are not co-branded, they're just kind of there and they're dependent on what matchups are booked for the show. But the other thing is the TLC gimmick in and of itself, I found that outside of one or two matches, having each match have to be a stipulation match didn't really enhance the matches themselves.
Well, yeah, and you want to have, and this goes back to what we talked about with Hell in the Cell. You know, you want the match to fit in and parallel what's going on between the athletes who are involved with them. Well, I guess AJ versus Dean is going to be, just having it as a TLC is just going to be more of a no disqualification type match. It just so happens that the belt is hanging from the sky. You know, most of these other matches, there really seems to be no rhyme or reason to why Alexis Bliss and Becky Lynch are going to be in a table match. No reason where Corbin and Kalisto should be in a chairs match, except for they set it up like on a SmackDown before. So there's no real reason to have these kind of stipulations unless they mean something. And I think you could build those up in a match, say, like Ziggler and Miz, who've gone back and forth quite a few times. You could do some type of gimmick in that match. A ladder, I guess, but, you know, to make it more of a blood feud. That is a match that it fits with.
Yeah, there are a couple different ways of trying to make these predetermined gimmick pay-per-views work, right? There's the really facile, like you said, we're going to set it up on one SmackDown. Someone uses a chair, so now they're in a chairs match. And there's the model of wanting to earn the gimmick, right? People talk about a feud has to earn a gimmick. And the way that they do that in WWE now, a lot of the time, is to just have people keep feuding and keep feuding and keep feuding until the gimmick show comes up, by which time you can say, oh, AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose have been feuding for many months by now. They deserve a gimmick match. Here they're having a gimmick match. You know, people feud and feud and feud until Hell in a Cell is coming up, and then let's have a Hell in a Cell match. You know, where in other contexts the gimmick would be earned, but we know that that month is coming up. And so, even though they've earned it on one level, we know that it's because of the calendar, so it kind of undercuts it.
Yeah, and I think no match was probably hurt the most by this, and Steve alluded to it, than the women's match between Becky Lynch and Alexa Bliss, where Alexa won the SmackDown women's title, but the match never really a big deal to me. And it's a shame because I like Becky Lynch. Her promos are hit and miss, but I think her and Alexa have had some good chemistry during this build-up, but the match itself felt very flat.
Yeah, I think they could have had a nice, you know, 15, 20-minute regular match that would have, you know, been a hard-fought, you know, maybe Bliss could have cheated or gotten a, you know, a quick fluke pin or something like that to defeat Lynch, and it would have been probably better, and you could have built the feud up that way. You know, they haven't – Becky Lynch missed that one match, and they really haven't had a lot of interaction one-on-one yet. So just, again, throwing the tables into it doesn't do much.
Yeah, and it was such like a WWE 2K17 finish. Like, Becky really was not injured to the point where she couldn't stop herself from going through the table. It was gravity. Like, the table just happened to be there, and Alexa just happened to throw it there. Like, if you're playing a video game and you set the table up, and it doesn't matter how injured your opponent is, if you hit it at the right spot, hey, the table broke. I won. And it felt... You know, you talk about earning things, it felt unearned, even by heel standards. Like, it just was like, And then they had Becky Lynch do the whole Cam Newton after the Super Bowl, and I don't want to talk to the reporters deal. Like, come on, man.
They've been doing that more and more lately, and I think sometimes it works with the winners. And if they're, you know, I don't know if they actually tell them they're going to be doing it, because it seems awkward sometimes. It's like... they script everything else, and then here, you know, you just fought for 15, 20 minutes. You just went through a table, and 60 seconds later, we want you to cut a promo. It reminds me of the original NXT program when they give Eli Cottonwood a mic and tell him to talk about facial hair.
Oh, good Lord. I kind of think the finish was earned as much as it needs to be for a heel, though. It kind of substitutes for the cheating that she might have done to win a regular one-on-one match. You know, where in a tables match like this, you can win in kind of a cheap way. It's a little like that time Cody Rhodes beat the Big Show because he stepped on the table. Where, I mean, it is cheap, and I think you're supposed to feel that way. And then Alexa Bliss goes on Talking Smack, and she's crying, and she has the title, and it's this, you know, huge moment, and this is what it means for my career, when she won it in kind of a cheap heelish way. So that's just kind of playing into the character a little more.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. And I did like what they did with her on SmackDown this past Tuesday. Again, I think her character is great. I just was disappointed in the match. But here's the big surprise to me. me on this entire disappointing. The other women's match, I think, exceeded my expectations, and that was the hardcore match with Nikki Bella and Carmella.
Well, in a match with Bella and Carmella, wow, that didn't realize that rhymes so much. That just has an automatic turnoff if I hear something like that. I have nothing against Carmella. I think, you know, when watching some of the remind me what the name of that show was that they did when the network first started, where they kind of went behind the scenes of NXT.
Breaking Ground.
Breaking Ground. Thank you. You know, she seemed very sweet. I liked, you know, her relationship that she's had with Bayley that they kind of played up at the end of Bayley's NXT run. She's got a lot of charisma, but she's still figuring it out in the ring. And I've never been a fan of the Bellas in the ring. And that's what I watch wrestling for, having a good story and having great action in the ring with it. And they did exceed the, you know, they brought the barricade in it and, didn't make it look cheesy like some of when you throw a big guy into the barricade, it flips over, you see how hollow it is, and it doesn't look like it would hurt at all, but you know, they were using it more as a springboard, and to see that a Bella Carmella match had some sort of semblance of decency behind it is a surprise to me.
That is a surprise, and I think that's something they're trying to do more and more with the women's division, not just pushing, you know, Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks and, like, the four horsewomen as, like, the women who can work, but also kind of trying to bring everyone along, too. Even people like Carmella and Nikki Bella and Alexa Bliss, to an extent, who need a little bit of work. But I think the thing that kind of hurt both women's matches on this show, unfortunately, was the crowd reaction. And I think we're going to talk about that a few times on this show, but the crowd was just not really having it, especially during the title match, I noticed. And it was kind of sad because the match, as it was actually being worked in the ring, was a perfectly fine match. It's just that I don't know how to fix the crowd reactions. You know, you go out and work a good match and people don't care. And they only kind of tune back in for a second when you're doing spots, when you're doing the tables and all these things, and the barrier and all that. So I don't really know what the answer is to that, guys.
Yeah, it's. I mean, granted, this wasn't the greatest show, but there was enough on the show, I think, that the crowd could have been more invested in. And the other thing is, if I'm going to pay the money, especially in a city like Dallas, to go see this thing, like I'm not going to sit on my hands. I can do that at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, these tickets are not to these shows are not cheap by any means.
No, not at all. So I dug this match though, but I'm just a sucker for fire extinguisher spots. That's my jam. So
sometimes you're just walking around at work and you know, you got to spice things up a little bit.
Yeah, every day I go into work and I look at that fire extinguisher, I'm like, not today, not today.
And I'm in a new office building now. I'm going to start scoping out just to see if I ever need to do something like put out a fire or just, you know, spray someone in the face for no apparent reason.
Well, which of those do you think is more likely, really?
I would say the latter.
Yeah. If they ever reinstitute, that's the word I was looking for, the 24/7 hardcore title. Got to know where the fire extinguishers are, the ladders, the mops. All types of office weaponry.
I might just reinstitute it and not tell anyone else.
Although, you know what? Out of all the random weaponry that people grab from under the ring, the fire extinguisher is the one thing that actually should be there.
Yeah.
Or the turnbuckle wrench was always a good one, too.
Oh, yeah, that's a classic. That's a classic. Well, speaking of classics, another match on this card was a classic because we got to see the 17, I want to say this is the 17th or 18th time in the past year that we've seen The Miz and Dolph Ziggler hook up. At least 17 times that these guys have got it on in the ring. And The Miz was once again victorious, retaining his IC title. Good match, 25 minutes. Nothing really new that these guys haven't done before that we saw on Sunday. What did you guys think of that match?
I thought it was probably the best match I've seen between them.
Which is interesting, seeing like how much crowd heat the other one had because Ziggler's career was on the line. And it's very odd to have a match where one has his career on the line and then two months later that didn't end the feud. And they're having another match in a ladder match. And that's my, you know, as much as people say they like the SmackDown show, we've talked about how, you know, we don't watch the weekly shows as much as some people, but we tune in for the big events. It's where their depth is a problem. You know, their depth, they have great athletes, you know, and like they threw, 10 guys in the opener and the pre-show. But at some point, you need to get some guys moving up to the top so you're not having a combination of AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, and, you know, The Miz, and that's it.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how many more times I can do this.
Yeah, well, I mean, if they cycle out Dolph, and I hope they do because I've talked about Dolph before, but I hope The Miz isn't back to feuding with, like, Apollo Crews, who, for all his virtues, isn't quite there and also feuded with The Miz for a few months before.
Mm-hmm. And he finally showed back up again on Sunday. I was like, where's this guy been? And he finally showed up in that big tag team match.
I thought I hadn't heard anything about him in a while.
Yeah, I didn't watch the pre-show. And I was wondering, like, what, man, Apollo Crews, someone you really wanted to push in the beginning, and then seeing that he's seems to be embroiled in a feud with Curt Hawkins, and they don't have superstars anymore, so I don't know where the two of them are going to blow off this feud.
Like, right there, you invalidate the legitimacy of your draft, because you spent a draft pick on Apollo Crews.
A decent one,
you drafted
too.
This man. Right, yeah. A good draft pick, a lottery pick on Apollo Crews, and now he's on the pre-show. Like, who's running SmackDown? Phil Jackson?
I don't know. Shane McMahon might be close.
Let's see. Other than the main event, because we'll talk about that in a second, was there anything else on the show? Because we had the Wyatt versus Slater and Rhino. We had Corbin and Kalisto, which was surprisingly good in my opinion. Was there anything else that really stood out on this card, or was it just kind of, you know, a middle-of-the-road show?
One of the things that surprised me about this show, kind of checking in on SmackDown for the first time in a while, is that Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton, two people whom I tend not to enjoy very much, put together,
yes,
really, really work together, and who saw that coming?
I didn't. I'll be honest, you know, because I was sick of their feud against each other, and I thought that this was not going to work. Matter of fact, I didn't even think they would last this long. I thought this was going to be kind of a Daniel Bryan joining the Wyatts deal, where it lasts for maybe a month,
exactly. If that.
But they work surprisingly well together. Like, I'm enjoying this. I still don't know how long they're going to keep it going, but they make a pretty good team.
Yeah, I find myself hoping that they really stay together for a while. I want at least one high-profile match with them defending the titles against Gable and Jordan. Because that, I think, would be a fascinating matchup.
I think a fascinating matchup would be Bray, Randy, and then Luke just utterly destroying the Hype Brothers and just throwing them down so hard they go through the ring and we never see them on television again.
Oh, Steve, that's mean.
Dark Steve is making an appearance.
Oh, boo.
I don't want to stay hyped. I don't want Mojo Rawley.
You are not at all hyped, my friend.
No.
Ooh, child.
Steve, was there anything else on this card that stood out for you?
That was actually going to be in my thought, too, is that I've been really satisfied with the Wyatt and Orton pairing. I really like the pre-Survivor Series and during the Survivor Series, the storyline that they have going with them. I don't know where Luke Harper is going to fit in with this. I'm a longtime proponent. I've talked in many shows on these airwaves about how I truly believe Luke Harper can be a star. The injuries have prevented that, but I also think that, you know, I don't know if they're going to like his look or think he's too hairy or something, you know, to give him a shot, but he's got so much talent and can work so many different styles. I compare him to Cesaro in terms of his abilities.
Wow.
Just the ability to wrestle in so many different styles. He can go lucha. He can go, you know, a big Hoss style. You know, he can just wrestle a lot of different people. And that you want that in a top guy who can.
And he's really improved, because when I remember when he and Rowan first came in, mm-hmm. I wasn't high on either guy. But to see how much he's improved in a relatively short amount of time, like I think like he could do some things. They just have to repackage him, because if he has a singles run like he did the first time, I don't think it's going to work, because his look is so associated with the Wyatt family.
Yeah, he has had the exact same look since the first time I saw him in the Independent in like 2010. Like it has not changed. It's the same white beater t-shirt, same hair, same beard. So yeah, they could do something different with him, or just have him be a, you know, a Braun Strowman type on SmackDown.
Oh, I just had a thought. I just had a thought, Glenn. I know you're gonna enjoy this. The way they repackage Luke Harper, they give a call to Marlena, Terry Runnels, have her put on those glasses and put her hair up in a bun. Mm-hmm. Comes out with a brand spanking new MacBook, and instead of Luke Harper, we get Lucas Harper. And we get the return of the computerized man of the 90s gimmick.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. He can shave his beard into a smart goatee.
Oh.
If you really want to sell the 90s, frost his tips.
He'd be like the inverse of Techno Team 2000, because they came from the future, and Lucas Harper can come from the past.
They should actually keep the 90s theme going and have them believe they're still in the 90s and have one of those iMacs that look like, an, you know, with like a purple backing.
Man, have them come out with like the Steve Jobs black turtleneck.
Oh, that's incredible.
That was in the 80s, that show.
Oh, book it. Book it. Well, speaking of bookings, let's get to the main event. Let's get to the big highlight of this show, and that was the championship match for the WWE World title, with AJ Styles defending against Dean Ambrose in a tables, ladders, and chairs match. Obviously, in ring, I thought it was a good match. I don't think these two guys could have a bad match if they tried. But the key takeaway, or the key talking point coming out of this show, fellas, was the finish, which once again involved everyone's favorite mascot, good old Chins McMahon himself, James Ellsworth. So, what'd you fellas think of this?
I'm kind of happy they're not actually trying to push James Ellsworth as a heel.
Yes.
I think it's better for him. I think it's better for anyone trying to sell it as something we should take seriously to an extent, to not try to push him as like an actual threat, but as someone who is such a freaking dope that he thinks he can, you know, betray Dean Ambrose and he'll laugh it off, like he did the last time one of his friends betrayed him, right? And that he really has AJ's number.
And kudos, I can't say it enough, like AJ Styles, arguably the best wrestler in the world for each of the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Just continually letting this guy from essentially the streets one-up him, stay in the main event with him. I mean, can you imagine how many top guys over the years would allow something like this to happen? You know, like even like a Zach Gowen, who came in as a joke. He was more stuck with, you know, Vince McMahon. The Spirit Squad, you know, they were treated kind of as a joke, but they at least had wrestling chops. You know, they had the high flying ability, or you know the 5-on-1 beatdown type stuff.
Yeah, I mean the comparison that came up first in my mind was Eugene versus Triple H.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And at least and Eugene, you know, Nick Dinsmore was known as a very high quality wrestler who trained a lot of people down in OVW over mm-hmm. the years. Like, James Ellsworth, I know he was on the Independents, but that is not a person who I have ever seen across my radar until he got killed by Braun Strowman on Raw. The one question I have, too, is that I was thinking about over the last few days. Obviously, he's at a ceiling. But how long can they keep this going? Zach Gowen was a guy who had a very limited shelf life, and then they just, you know, threw him by the wayside. You never heard from him again. Spirit Squad, a lot of those guys got thrown away. Never heard from him until recently.
Man.
You know he's in the Rumble.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, of course. Versus Goldberg, probably. I think if they still had regular jobbers, then he could just stay there and he would be good in that role effectively forever. But with the way they book most of their TV shows now, I don't know that they would even bother keeping him around in the long term for that.
Yeah, I'm you know, I hate to be the negative guy. I hate to be negative Nate here, but I have reached my saturation point with James Ellsworth, particularly when you put him in the main event angles. And while I think Dean and AJ have done a good job with the guy, I think it's time for him to start transitioning out. And I don't mean out of the company, because I do think you can still get some mileage out of him, but I think it's time for him to start working down the card. You know, you talked about some of those other quote-unquote joke characters back in the day. In addition to a guy like Eugene, the first guy that came to my mind was Barry Horowitz when he got that big win over Chris Candido. And that was a cool little mid-card feud that had some legs and gave Barry Horowitz a little bit of shine. And, you know, it ran for about a month or so, and then it was done with. But that was a mid-card feud. James Ellsworth had been all over SmackDown in the past month. And I think he's still popular. I still think he's going to get a good reaction. But I definitely see, you know, if he hasn't jumped the shark is certainly circling in the waters. So I think I'd like to see maybe, you know, and I know this might not be any better for the purists out there, but I think Ellsworth Miz might be a fun little feud before we finally kind of shuffle him down to your main event shows or your pre-shows.
I'm folding back my James Ellsworth shirt that I was going to get you for Christmas, and I'm glad I didn't take the tag off.
You know, if you got me that and you think I would like it, there's no chins in hell.
Oh.
That should be his theme song, No Chins in Hell.
Man, you know, people talk about wrestling shirts, most of them, as things that how could anyone ever wear them out in public? Especially the Ellsworth shirt. How could you go around wearing that thing?
One you can't explain.
One other thing on the whole Ellsworth thing that I don't think has been remarked on enough is hasn't Ambrose kind of been treating him like crap anyway? So was Sunday like Ambrose getting his comeuppance for mistreating his little buddy?
Yeah, I had no problem with that happening. You know, he still comes out as sympathetic because, yeah, Dean Ambrose is just kind of an ass. You know, he doesn't really treat the friends well that much. And, you know, actually bullying him, telling him to go away.
You know, when everybody was clamoring for the big Ellsworth heel turn, I was not amongst that crowd because, and I've got some bias here, because while AJ has been doing a great job as a heel, I still think he'd be a phenomenal babyface, pun fully intended. And I would love to see heel Dean versus baby AJ. Because I think that, like, their feud now is it's over, but I don't think it's super hot by any stretch. But I think if you had the dynamic switched, it might have gotten over a little bit more, because the people want to cheer AJ. Like,
right.
He's the heel by designation, but nobody wants to boo a guy that wrestles like that. Nobody wants to boo a guy that's worked as hard as he has to get here. And quite frankly, nobody wants to boo a guy with that theme song. Like, that's still one of the coolest theme songs on the main roster, and it gets a reaction. So I think it's going to happen eventually. I don't know when, but I think the moment they pull the trigger on AJ as a babyface, as good as he's been, I think the reactions will only be that much better.
Yeah, I mean, he has good heel promos, I think. But yeah. I think around this time of year, you have to start thinking about WrestleMania. And despite the fact that it feels a little ridiculous to be talking about him debuting as a face a year ago almost, and then turning heel and talking about turning him face again, that WrestleMania crowd is going to love him so, yeah, so much. And so do you want to try to go into WrestleMania with him as a heel?
Especially if the match is AJ versus Cena, which has been kind of bandied about as one of the possibilities. Like, there's no way Cena gets cheered in that match, in that crowd.
Hell no. I mean, there's no way Cena gets cheered at a WrestleMania anyway, but that's we've been over it.
Well, yeah, I mean, at SummerSlam, the AJ Cena match, AJ was by far the de facto face, with Cena getting the cheers after he lost and made it seem like he was going away for a long time. You know, kind of getting the respect cheer, like, you know, we know you're good, but we just like to boo you because of your jorts.
So overall, for TLC, where would you guys kind of rank that show? Because I think it wasn't a terrible show, but I just think it wasn't, like, outside of the main event and maybe that Miz Ziggler match, there wasn't a whole lot to, you know, really latch on to going forward. Like other than maybe the tag title switch, it really wasn't a show that I think has legs going forward.
I would say I would give it like a 4.5 or a 5, somewhere around there. If I was not, this is how I kind of rank my shows these days. If it is a show where I'm just watching it in order to do a podcast, this podcast, that doesn't bode well. And this right. was one of the I was genuinely excited to see Survivor Series. I would have watched that whether I was doing a podcast or not. I love those type of matches, and I was intrigued what the finishes were going to be.
If this wasn't a $10 show and this was the old school pay-per-view prices, ain't no way in hell I think
absolutely
you'd pay
not.
For that, Steve.
Absolutely not. You know, this was basically a step above an actual SmackDown. So, you know, your main event was good to great, and that was really the only match I had any interest in going in, except for maybe Alexa and Becky, and it turned out to hold up that way.
Hey, I liked a Dolph Ziggler match, so pay-per-view is pretty amazing for me. And even above that, aside from maybe the pre-show match, which has different expectations since it's basically and the rest kind of piled together, I don't think there was anything on the show that was completely dismissible. You know, everything had a point. Everything had somewhat of a build. And that may be grading on a curve, and we're grading on a whole lot of curves now. But I'll definitely go a little more positive than Steve for this show.
Okay, that's a whole lot of curves and turns, Glenn.
I know.
Like it's going to be a rocky road to the Royal Rumble. But before we get there, I think there might be a roadblock in our way.
Oh, you mean TLC wasn't the roadblock?
Now we've got another roadblock because
where is this roadblock positioned on the line?
I believe it's at the end of the line, and you know it wouldn't be a calendar year without Raw getting the last laugh in terms of pay-per-views in the calendar year. So yeah, they're the A show, as we've been told time and time again. So they're gonna close out the year with another special event. Yay! As of right now, guys, we've got 3 matches on the card. We've got Sasha Banks versus Charlotte in a 30-minute Iron Man / Iron Woman match for the WWE Raw Women's title. We've got Seth Rollins versus Chris Jericho in a list on a pole match. I'm just going to leave that there and see how many people actually buy it, and we'll see it on the dirt sheets. But they said it was a list on a pole match. And what might be the main event, it'll either be this or the women's match in the main event. Kevin Owens defending against Roman Reigns for the WWE Universal Championship. How do those matches whet your appetite? You can go first, Glenn.
Well, I'm looking forward to the women's match. Obviously, it's a pay-per-view match, so Charlotte's going to be winning the title back. I know.
We got to talk about that in a second.
I know they've had approximately a million matches, but, you know, almost all of them are good, so, okay. Rollins versus Jericho, I think, is a little fresher than some of these matches. I know they fought on Raw a couple of times, which, obviously, they did. And so did Owens and Roman Reigns. This is the world we live in now. How does Reigns get into this match without putting up his title, too? How'd that happen?
That's a really good question.
It's a Hogan versus Warrior. Where's Jack Tunney?
Oh, man. What about you, Steve? Are you excited for these announced matches?
This goes back to what I said about TLC, where you look at it on paper going in, and there's, you know, one and a half matches that stand out. These three matches all have potential to be great. Jericho, while his, you know, in-ring has, you know, he's 46. He's still in great shape, but he's still 46. But I still think he can do great with Seth Rollins, and his character has been very fun to watch. Owens and Reigns, I'm a huge Kevin Owens fan. I think Roman Reigns is terribly underrated. That will be a great match. And, you know, Sasha versus Bayley, that 30-minute Iron Woman match that they had on NXT, I thought was really well designed. Yeah. Thought it was really well set up, where they had a very little downtime, and 30 minutes is a much better length of an Iron Woman match or Iron Man match than a 60-minute. And I think that is another one that, if it's laid out properly, can be excellent. So just based on that, if they just had those three matches on the show, I would be very happy.
Yeah, because it'd be a short show.
Well, that's a big part of it, too. But anything else that they put in is just going to be a cherry on top.
Yeah, I think already on paper, this is probably going to be a better show than TLC. Reigns and Owens, despite the fact that I don't know either, Glenn, why Reigns is getting this opportunity, it's going to be a good match, because despite how the fans feel about Roman, the guy's been pretty good in the ring this year.
Oh, absolutely. So
The two of them will have a really strong match. Rollins and Jericho, that's going to be good. But when it comes to the women, I think I got a love-hate thing with this entire run with Charlotte and Sasha, because I think on the one hand, they have surpassed whatever feud you want to put up as the greatest feud, the greatest women's feud in WWE history, whether you want to go Trish Lita or you want to go Randy Richter.
Yeah, I was just going to say Trish and Lita fought for like 10 years.
But I think already in 1 year they passed that because of the level of what they did. And it goes back to that really strange, really awkward. What's the show where they ride around in the cars on the network?
Ride Along.
Ride Along, yeah. It goes back to that really awkward Ride Along with Ric Flair and Charlotte.
Ooh.
Where they stopped talking for like 20 minutes during the ride. And Rick basically was like, you know, Sasha is your Ricky Steamboat. And I think there's a lot of validity to that because they have great chemistry in the ring. Sasha, despite her promos, which I still think needs some work in terms of her being a babyface, her in-ring work as a babyface and selling for Charlotte is great. Both women are, you know, they're fearless. They go out there and push the boundaries. But I really hated the way that they juggled this title. And it's not, you know, because of the title has to have integrity. For me, it's more a storyline thing where, you know, Sasha's wins have all been on Raw and Charlotte's wins have all been on pay-per-view to establish this pay-per-view winning streak that up until this year has never meant anything. Like, I don't ever recall a character bragging about, I'm undefeated on pay-per-views outside of The Undertaker, which is different because that's WrestleMania. That's one show. But with Charlotte, it's almost like, you know, an NFL team, like, hey, man, we might lose every Sunday, but on Monday Night Football, we are undefeated. It's like, okay, but you're 6-4. So it's going to be a good match. It might steal the show. But I think, man, Charlotte will probably win to continue this pay-per-view thing going. But they need to separate. Like, these two need some time apart, I think. The problem, though, is where do they go, guys? Because outside of your big three, Charlotte, Bayley, and Sasha, the pickings for the women on Raw, Maya, Boo aside, are pretty slim.
Yeah, that's one thing. Which one of them, like, keeps the title at the end of this Best of 76 series? when they split off and when one of them has to face another challenger, you know, Charlotte versus Bayley might be like an obvious match for WrestleMania. Although because it's WrestleMania, they might just stick Sasha in there too. Or if Sasha keeps it, you know, fighting Bayley or Nia Jax, that's a match they haven't done before, unless they did it on some Raw that I don't know about. But that would be a fascinating matchup. It really depends on who they want to elevate next and what they want to do, you know, in the longer term. And in the meantime, do you think? Well, I think that you already pretty much answered. You know, do you think it devalues the feud and devalues the title to keep bouncing back and forth like this?
I mean, it does in a way, but that's the lesser of my complaints with this, because I just sure. think with this feud, they had chances to make moments. Like, these matches have been really good, but they've had chances to make moments, and I think they didn't capitalize. Like, I think if you have Sasha win the belt at SummerSlam instead of on that first Raw after the draft, that's a much bigger moment. Or if you have Sasha win in the Hell in a Cell, that goes from becoming just a trivia note to a moment that people remember forever, you know, because I think, and this is no shade on Charlotte, but I don't think 10 years from now, people are going to really remember that other than, oh yeah, remember that time Hell in a Cell had the main event with the women? It's not going to be this indelible moment much like it could have been if Sasha had won in her hometown. That could have been like her Shawn Michaels boyhood moment, you know, or the boyhood dream. But I think they dropped the ball on that. And then you got Ric Flair, and God bless Ric Flair, and I know he's probably back because they're going to try to keep him around through January to cross-promote that ESPN 30 for 30 on him. But I don't know if I like Ric Flair being re-injected into this story.
Well, I like...
And this is coming from somebody who, like I love Ric Flair. Like, he's one of my all-time favorites. But I don't even know if I don't know if I like him being re-injected into this storyline.
What I liked was Charlotte's dual promos on Raw this week, where she did the heartfelt, tear-jerking promo to get him out there and apologize and all that, and then heel on him and cut a whole different heel promo on him. Her promos in that segment, I thought, were great, and some of the best promos that she's had, frankly. What kind of turned me off a little bit was when Sasha Banks came out to defend the honor of Ric Flair, which feels tonally off. And I mean, I know the babyface has to do that and all, but for this, like, family squabbling that's going on to have Sasha Banks injected in the middle of it just felt weird. Yeah. Steve, what do you think about all this? What's the cause of all this?
Well, here's the thing. As you guys were talking, I wanted to go back and look at the amount of matches that Charlotte and Sasha Banks have had that have been televised, and then I had a stroke because I couldn't. And if you add the amount that they've had on live events, like, it would probably be 50 to 100 easily. But I think I counted 10 just this half of the year. And I'm just talking single matches, too. I'm not talking tag matches. And it's just too much. It is too much to have that. I think the Flair part has run its course. They might as well, since Sasha has, you know, relations to, like, Snoop and has feelings, you know, heavy feelings for Eddie Guerrero, they should just, you know, bring out Vicky and Snoop. And they're just desperate for ways to keep this feud going because, as you said, Nate, who else is there? Unless, you know, they're bringing back.
Maybe if Charlotte hadn't slapped Rick this past week, we could have gotten a mixed tag at WrestleMania with Charlotte and Rick versus Sasha and Snoop.
Oh my God!
Oh, that would have been great.
The only thing I could think of is, you know, they're going to give Emma a big, you know, push as she comes back here. I believe this Monday that she's coming back after all of these promotional videos. You know, is Bailey ready to be hooked up to this? I mean, she and Sasha have history together. I don't know. This is why I wish they kind of did the old, the original brand split where there's just one champion for total and they can just go back and forth between brands, because Charlotte against Sasha on one show, Charlotte against Becky on the other show, I think that has a lot more legs.
Well, then Alexa wouldn't have a title at all.
Everyone doesn't need titles. Alexa can get by in her winning smile, her really cool Freddy Krueger outfit, and her nifty twisty splash.
We all do need a nifty twisty splash.
Yeah, we do.
Yes, we do. And speaking of nifty twisty splashes, and this also ties into Snoop Dogg, who I believe is listed at 187 pounds. So he qualified for the WWE Cruiserweight division. I think that's what we got to talk about after the break, fellas, because one of the biggest things that happened since our last episode is the inclusion of, or the debut, I guess, would be the better word, 205 Live on the network, and we got a new Cruiserweight champ. So, yeah, let's take a break, and hopefully, if the editors are doing their job, we're probably going out to some TLC right now.
We let in with a little Linda McMahon, I bet.
Yeah, we had to come in with that WrestleMania theme, which is so iconic for our new small business administrator. But yeah, we're going to take a break, come back on the other side, and talk all things Cruiserweight. We got so much to get to in this week's episode of Clotheslines and Headlines, so don't you guys go anywhere. We'll be back on the other side.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, Place to Be Nation Pop feed, Pro Wrestling Only feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All night long.
are back. Episode number 13. And they said we couldn't get past 12. I don't know who they are. It could be Justin, whose birthday it is on the day we are taping. And I think that might be the assignment that he is on. He could be looking for his youth, which is gone.
I heard he was scoping out every Carvel in the radius trying to find Fudgy the Whale.
And that is the sweet voice of Nate Milton, the Godfather, who you hear, our big host on Close Ends and Headlines. I am Steve Willey. Sitting in, our dear friend, Glenn Butler.
Hello.
I am mandated to be on podcasts with him. As I have said, it is in my Place to Be Nation contract. And one man who has his signature is on that contract is joining us right now. I don't even know his title these days anymore. Justin's gone, so I'll just call him the chairman of the board, Mr. Chad Campbell. Chad?
Yeah, you don't want to call me the Godfather or Roger Morissette's going to be asking for my autograph, but how's it going, guys?
Good. I hear Brad's changing his title all the time, depending on where he's at and who he's talking to.
Yeah,
so.
I think Brad's going to start going by God. That's the next step. Also, Sonny's birthday today, so that may be where Justin's at.
A little, he's. I was wondering why Skype was busy. Now I think we know. Well, and Chad, we've had you on Close Ends and Headlines mainly to talk about New Japan in the past. I'm really excited to have you on tonight because we're talking two things that are near and dear to my heart this segment, and that are Cruiserweights and Ring of Honor, and two big news items concerning both. One, of course, Birmingham, Alabama's favorite show, 205 Live, has debuted. And we've talked on this show several times about the Cruiserweights and our excitement through them with the Cruiserweight Classic, our worry about how they were going to be treated as they were brought up to Raw, our disappointment in that fact, then again, our excitement over the show being 205 Live, thinking that it was all the Cruiserweights are going to go over the SmackDown. We are two episodes in now. And Chad, what are your initial thoughts on this show?
Yeah, so two episodes in, so I don't want to hit the panic button yet. I think that's unfair, but I do think, like, for me, the Cruiserweight Classic is quite frankly probably one of my favorite things WWE's ever done.
Mm-hmm.
It's especially that I can remember, like, being a quote unquote smart fan. Like, it just seemed perfectly tooled for me. I love the storytelling aspect combined with the great matches we saw throughout, combined with kind of that freelance vibe of these people that weren't under contracts, that were from all over the world, kind of showcasing their talent and bringing a different style to the proceedings. And I think so far with 205 Live, we kind of have a little bit of that flavor. With some guys like Jack Gallagher and Daivari being able to mix it on the mat a little bit. And we haven't seen Metallic yet, so that should be a big debut, or Tozawa. So those are kind of the two kind of outsiders that we haven't seen yet. But so far, 2 weeks in, I would say like the in-ring action has been good, but something about kind of the way it's being presented hasn't been the greatest, and it's been in front of a pretty lukewarm crowd, to be honest. The way they're taping it right after SmackDown, it seems like you are having some burnout effect from the crowd that is sort of affecting the overall product you're seeing on your screen.
And Glenn, we had kind of talked about that too, you and I, within the last couple of days, about the placement of the show. And tell me your thoughts on that. You know, do you think, is there a way that can be changed around? Can you think that the crowd, after sitting through a 2 hour plus taping, can react, or is there a different way to go with it?
It does feel a little backwards, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Placing it after SmackDown, where usually when you're at the end of a 3-hour taping block, it gets a little exhausting. That would usually be when they bring out all the big main event stars that people are going to have reactions to regardless, hopefully. So it seems a little backwards to, after SmackDown, be rolling out people whom you really, really need to build. And I was hopeful after the first episode when Jack Gallagher came out to no reaction, zero. And then through his match, through his wrestling, through his style, started to get over, started to get a reaction, and then did get a pretty good reaction when he won his match on the first week. But then you go to the second week, and he comes out again, and that hasn't endured. He was right back to getting no reaction, and then tried to work through that through his wrestling again, but didn't really have the same effect. So it's kind of depressing, and it makes you think, you know, they tried to just bring everyone up to Raw, and then have them on Raw, and get them a reaction on Raw, and that wasn't working. And they introduced 205 Live, where we're going to give them their own time, it's their own block, they can get over on their own show. And that, like Chad said, it's 2 weeks in, you can't pull the ripcord on it now. But at some point, there's going to be the idea, do we just have to take them back to Full Sail?
Right.
Where they were for the Cruiserweight Classic, the crowd for which was absolutely rabid for almost all of them. Partly because of the excitement of getting all these freelancers in, but also because they genuinely appreciated, you know, their different wrestling styles and their experience in that regard. So it's a tough question that they might have to answer sooner than later.
Nate, do you think this can succeed a little bit more if they just reverse the flow and do what they do with Superstars, Main Event, Velocity over the years, and just air the show before SmackDown? Do we need a SmackDown pre-show and just throw these guys out there for the hour before, get the crowd going?
And I think they can do that now because I think, if I read correctly, the Main Event taping schedule's been moved around.
Mm-hmm.
So they could easily put 205 Live in that slot. But I think we still have problems. And, you know, Brother Chad and Brother Glenn are not ready to throw in the towel. I got my towel in my hand. I'm not throwing it yet, but it is in the launch position. I've got it getting ready to throw it in the ring because I think there's two fundamental flaws here. And one is from programming, a programming standpoint. And it would be so much easier for them to take an hour off of Raw. Preferably, you know, I would prefer it to be that first hour, but for ratings' sake, I understand why they wouldn't do it. But make that last hour that nobody really gives a damn about. Make that 205 Live, because at least that way you're not kind of breaking up the flow of things and putting these guys that are supposed to be quote-unquote Raw exclusives on SmackDown's night. The other thing, though, is a presentation standpoint, and I know we're going to get into some of the competitors here in the division in a second, but if I'm just a fan that didn't watch the Cruiserweight Classic and I'm going by what I've been presented with on Raw, I don't know any of these guys' names. I know we've got Video Game Guy, we've got British Dude that looks like Conan O'Brien, we've got the Slumdog Millionaire Boys, we've got Dancing Black Guy, and we've got Serious Black Guy. We've got the old veteran guy that used to run around with Paul London. And then we got a bunch of other dudes that I can't be bothered to know, because the WWE has not presented them in a fashion for me to get to know them. And I think the most glaring example of this is in the case of Rich Swann, who is your new champion. Obviously, you know, fans that watch the Cruiserweight Classic or even, you know, watch this guy when he was on the independent scene know that this guy has a great story. Know that he is much more than dancing or more than an entertainer. You know, that's part of who this guy is, but that's not everything to this guy. And if you just watch Raw, you really wouldn't know much about this guy other than, hey, Rich Swann gets the party started. And what was the nickname they kept trying to make stick this week? The outlandish Rich Swann.
Oh, God. Yeah, they really need to stop saying that every time they say his name.
He's outlandish. It's like, no, It's like that. It's not going to stick. It's like that line from Mean Girls. It's like, stop trying to make fetch happen, Gretchen. It's not going to stick. And Outlandish is not going to stick with Rich Swann either. But they did right by him on 205 Live by, you know, bringing up his life story and giving him some time to talk on the mic. But it almost felt too little too late, because first impressions are really hard to break, particularly with wrestling fans, particularly with modern wrestling fans who live in this quick microwave society where things are so consumable, especially when you have the network. So I think in a perfect world, they would have never left Full Sail, or at least if they had come to the main roster, they'd be on SmackDown, where that crowd, where that show needs the bodies, and I think that crowd would probably be a little bit more receptive to them. But in its current incarnation, Steve, I just don't know how long it's going to last. And it's not because the in-ring work is bad. The in-ring work is quite good. But matches without an investment in characters and storylines, it gets old pretty quick.
And then I think unless you are bringing SmackDown around the horn to big wrestling towns, your Chicago's, your Toronto's, your New York's, where people know these guys and can overpower. If you got 10,000 people in the stadium and you only got 1,000 people who know who they are, they're going to be excited enough to see, say, a Tozawa, that they are going to chant, and then you're going to get some kids chanting along because they're going to have to go around the horn. You mentioned Jack Gallagher. He can get people over based on his wrestling. That initial four-way they had on Raw, by the end of the match, people were going crazy for Grand Metalik. They had, you know, he was doing his high-flying stuff, you know, a lot of rope walking that you don't generally see. They had the crowd going. Well, then you got to go around the horn with it. You got to go to, you know, I don't know, you know, Detroit. And, yeah, I'm throwing shade at you, Jordan Duncan. And, you know, Lincoln, Nebraska.
Yeah, is it going to play in Wilkes-Barre?
Yeah, exactly. It can play in Wilkes-Barre if it's been established at that point. And the other thing that I've been, you know, I said when we were talking about Raw, you can't give these guys 3-minute matches and have Tony Nese in a 7-minute match just start throwing a chin lock like he's Randy Orton in 2012. You know, show them as cruiserweights. Show what makes them different. Let Gulak, like, stretch people like crazy. Let, you know, Rich Swann play the guitar on the way to the ring and the crowd chant all night long for him. Let Tozawa just be himself. And we could talk about that too. You know, Chad, we had talked, you wanted to kind of go through the roster, and I could read it off real quick. We got our new champ, Rich Swann. We got the 8-bit hero, Mega Man TJ Perkins, Jack Gallagher. The guy which I have no idea why he's there, besides a couple people in Full Sail got a kick out of his hostess name, Ho Ho Loon. The Bollywood Boys, Noam Dar, the aforementioned Tony Nese and Drew Gulak. Not one but two Muslim stereotypes, Arya Daivari and Mustafa Ali. Cedric Alexander, who was the biggest pop, I would say, on that initial episode. Lince Dorado out of Puerto Rico. Akira Tozawa, Grand Metalik, and Brian Kendrick. Chad, going through, you know, why don't you grab a couple of those that you wanted to talk about, and pro or con?
I'll grab one I think's a pro and one that I think's a con. So, and this is just based off mostly episode two. So, Mustafa Ali, they did a little vignette last night, which I thought was kind of interesting, and I'm kind of intrigued to see where it goes, because, you know, they talked about the Muslim stereotype, and Mustafa Ali said, you know, before people have even seen me, as soon as they hear my name, they're ready to boo me. And I thought that was at least groundbreaking and interesting to hear that discussed on WWE television, because that was from the days Muhammad Hassan, you know.
Yeah, they're very long past.
Yes, yes. The track record shows that's not seen, I guess, in a positive light, just the presentation of that. So I'm very intrigued to see where that could go, and Mustafa Ali just as a worker this year, I think, had a great renaissance in the Chicago area. I mean, he's a really interesting, unique guy if you've been following the indie scene, because I remembered in like 2008, 2009, he was kind of in that next crop of IWA Mid-South talent, where, you know, you had Hero and CM Punk, and then you had Matt Sydal and Delirious and Jimmy Jacobs and Alex Shelley. And then after those groupings, you ended up with Mustafa Ali right at the tail end, before IWA Mid-South got in real financial straits. And so, and then it was just like he kind of disappeared for 3 or 4 or 5 years and then showed up and has been working Dreamwave and freelance and AAW very regularly, really impressive, had some great matches. I just watched his match with Zack Sabre Jr. from AAW a couple of days ago. That was a fantastic match. So I'm really excited about him and think he could be a cornerstone for this division and kind of what the 205 show needs, where, you know, he can wrestle, he can fly, he has a unique story, and it's something a different presentation-wise from what you would see on a Raw or SmackDown. So he kind of checks all the boxes there. So that's my positive guy. My negative guy is going to be Noam Dar.
I had a feeling.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. It's just like the guy that you go into a job interview and you see him sitting in the chair that's going to go ahead of you. And, you know, he's wearing this nice suit. He's a good looking guy. He has this real thick resume. And you're like, you know, why should I even, you know, go in and try for the job? But just something doesn't come together for him. He is really young. He's, I think, only 23. So he's about the, I think he may be the youngest guy with the WWE contract on kind of their main brand TV right now.
I read yesterday that apparently Noam Dar is the first person to wrestle on Monday Night Raw who was born after Monday Night Raw premiered.
Oh, that's a cool fact. I like that. That's nice. Yeah, so he's a young guy, but, I mean, the British indies right now are so flush with talent. You have Ospreay, Scroll, Gallagher, even step beyond that. There's just so many guys to come through, or young, hungry guys. It really feels like on the independent scene, that's the area that's breaking out right now. And Dar is just someone that nobody is really clamoring for, and I just don't think right now his personality is there or his in-ring action is there, and he kind of just feels very vanilla and very manufactured, and I don't really see a way to kind of get in personality-wise. I mean, they're kind of, what was that they were calling him, the supernova, or, you know, he's wearing that kind of cosmic jacket, and so they're kind of doing some type of character with that, but it failed pretty horribly yesterday. I mean, even his match wasn't terrible with Cedric yesterday, but on episode 2 of 205, but the crowd just didn't seem to care, and then I thought his promo was poor. So those are two guys, one that I think they really should get behind, Mustafa Ali, and then Noam Dar. He's kind of a guy I think could have use some refinement down in Full Sail before he was given this opportunity, in my opinion.
It's funny that you bring up that character for Dar, Chad, because that just immediately brought to mind a character that is conspicuous by his absence in this division. And I think it really maybe speaks to how some in the front office of the company, and when I say some, I mean that 70-year-old man, feels about this division. This division, if you're trying to take somebody established on your roster and build a division around them and have somebody that the fans have a connection to, wouldn't it make sense to make Neville the forefront of this division?
Yeah.
And the fact that like they've not really done anything with Neville on the main roster, but still they they haven't outright said it, but it almost feels like it's implied that he's too good to be lumped in with the rest of the cruiserweights. That to me says a lot about how he thinks about this division.
Yeah, I see no reason why Neville and Kalisto are both not, you know, at least featured. You know, if they want to dip in and kind of, it's sort of ambiguous whether they're on the main show or on 205 or whatnot. But, I mean, both of those guys have worked with people throughout this division. I mean, Neville and Tozawa worked a ton in Dragon Gate. And Kalisto's a Chicago guy like Mustafa Ali. So they're familiar with these workers, and I think that would be a great way to at least have somebody that the mainstream audience, you know, again, if you're from Oklahoma City and you're taking your family to this show, you know, to SmackDown, it's kind of a coin flip whether you're watching the Cruiserweight Classic with them or not on the network. Probably more likely you're not. But at least if somebody like Kalisto or Neville comes out there, it's like, hey, this is a familiar face. And then if they have that great match with another competitor within the division, that elevates them up. So now automatically their notoriety has been raised.
Yeah, exactly. I had the same thought about Adrian Neville and about Kalisto. I actually kind of expected to see them in the tournament, too, when they were getting this whole thing started.
What makes me kind of question stuff, too, you know, Chad, you were talking about Noam Dar. For a guy who is that young, why not put him in NXT and have him, you know, not just be on television, but go around the horn in Florida, do some of those house shows? When you already have guys who are not really on TV, Roderick Strong, I'm looking at you, who could pop right up on Raw, and if he's going to go and die in the ring, at least he knows how to react because he's been doing this long enough with big-name guys and, you know, has matches under his belt with these, you know, with your Tozawa, with, you know, Cedric. And I'm assuming he's gone with Neeson and Gulak as well. You know, it just, you have the talent down in Florida. It's very odd who they chose to come up and who they did not choose to come up.
And maybe the best guy, you know, in terms of maybe somebody that could really portray a character. Because, again, that's something that I keep going back to. These guys don't have defined characters. Somebody who had a character from day one, whatever company he walks into, is the guy that you had on commentary for 205 Live, and that's Austin Aries. Like, I think when he is able to come back, man, he, if they book him properly, which is always a gamble and a crapshoot, Brother Chad, I think he immediately injects, if not star power, at least some personality into the division.
Yeah, and he's someone that's a great kind of template for some of these guys that may need a little refinement to look at. Because when Austin Aries was Noam Dar's age on the indie scene, you know, he was kind of like your indie generic wrestler guy that would come out to metal, had the, you know, the bangs that were coming down, but, you know, not a lot of personality there.
Trying to grow the long hair, but it would curl up on him because
right,
he just couldn't do it.
Right, you know, had the choker necklace at certain points, too. You know, just every kind of early 2000s Spencer's, Shops at Spencer's and Hot Topic stereotype that you can clamor up. And you know, throughout the years through Generation Next and his run in Ring of Honor, everything, the personality kind of came along with him. And now he's honed in his work, has the great personality, and yeah, would be a great asset to some of these guys. The roster overall, it's like if you look at the names on the roster, yeah, there's a couple of guys that you're just kind of like, huh, like Dar and for me, Ho-Ho-Loon. But otherwise, I mean, there's still a lot of dynamic, fabulous guys that have potential just in that group of names that Steve read off. It's just figuring out how they can differentiate them and kind of bring some of the unique aspects that made the Cruiserweight Classic so great up on the big stage, so to speak, in front of a wider audience now.
And, you know, to bring Mystique to another area, that's not the best segue ever. But, hey, I could have also said, speaking of cruiserweights, because you got the whole Ring of Honor roster.
That was an outlandish segue, Steve.
Yeah, it definitely was. That is my nickname, the Supernova. Outlandish Steve Willie.
But again, I hate to harp on this, but it's like somebody in the creative meeting just threw a dart at a board full of adjectives. Like he could have just as easily been the bodacious Rich Swann, the petulant Rich Swann, the pensive Rich Swann. He just thinks a lot, folks.
I can't wait for a little cupcake, Ho Ho Loon.
Oh God!
Oh man! He'll come out with a costume, a brown costume with the little white curly cues down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
You ever think they do it like Mad Libs? Give me an adjective.
Well, I mean, real quick, T.J. Perkins. I think that's been probably the biggest casualty. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I'm 30 years old. Okay, so I'm a relatively younger guy, I would say. But TJ is older than me, and just the way he talks and these promos and this, like, video game character, like, asking people, like, what are their stats, bro, and all. I mean, it's just, nobody talks like this.
No.
Like, nobody, it's not relatable at all. Like, it's like a cool entrance, but they've tried to portray that into a whole character, and he just, I mean, it's you talk about somebody that when September was the finale of the Cruiserweight Classic, and he left Evolve to a lot of fanfare, and you were like, you know, good for this guy that's for 16 years been working hard, was homeless at different points, just kind of overcame all this, and now looks like on this huge upper trajectory, and by now, I mean, now he's losing, you know, 6 minutes to on Raw, and doesn't look like he's going to be too prominent on 205 Live. I mean, he's kind of just going to be a guy in the mix. So
yeah,
a real, real misfire.
Yeah, the fact that on 2 weeks of 205 Live, they've had him doing promos and guest commentary, which, he has strengths as a wrestler. Speaking right now is not one of them.
No.
Mm-hmm. And relying on him so much in that context on the first two episodes of this new television product is not a good sign.
And it's because, you know, you talk about using him in that speaking context, it goes to Chad's point, because they have him scripted so ridiculously. Like, nobody talks like that. You know, you're a grown-ass man, T.J. Perkins. Stop telling me to reset. And I've got to pause this action right now, guys, so I can select my opponent. I know. Shut up, T.J. You know, this is a guy that I am a huge fan of, still am, because, like you said, he's worked so hard to get here, and he's so good in the ring. And I think there's a really engaging story there. You know, a real life story about this kid who chased a dream and did whatever it took to get to this point. And, you know, you've also got the aspect of, you know, being a Filipino American. Like, that's an audience that never really gets represented in professional wrestling. And I think there's a story there. And the fact that he has such an engagement with his fans online. Like, this is a dude that really could be a great babyface, but because you've picked out one aspect of his character, you know, oh, this guy plays video games backstage, he'll be the video game guy, and you got him dressing like a damn Pokemon trainer. It doesn't work, and it just, again, speaks to, I think some people in the office have a good idea with this thing, but the people that ultimately have the final say on this thing did not know, or still do not know, what they're getting with this. You know, this is not anywhere near the level of the WCW Cruiserweights or even the X Division in TNA. And it's a shame because, like you said, there's a lot of talented guys that make up this division. I just don't know how long this experiment is going to last.
And the hope is that, you know, the 205 Live becomes more of the Cruiserweight Classic where they can. And there were, like you said, Nate, a little bit of that scene when you're talking about Rich Swann's story. You saw a little bit in the promo about it. But if you keep doing that and showing who these people are, maybe you're not going to get the big pop in the arena, but you might start to down the line.
Oh, see, that you're making me mad again, Steve, because now I'm thinking about this. And it's like this.
I don't want to make you mad, Nate.
I feel like Glenn in the first segment. Like, there's this cognitive dissonance, especially with a character like Rich Swann. Like, you know, you give him time to speak, and he tells you about losing his parents. He's like, damn, I really feel for this guy. Like, I'm glad he overcame all this. But if you just watch Raw, all you know is this guy dances. He's happy. He's outlandish. Like, what the hell, man? Like, there's no connection to the character on 205 and the character on Raw besides it being the same guy.
Yeah, there's. I mean, you can just go through this roster and look at the stories. I mean, somebody like Tozawa, you could talk about how he was kind of the problem child in Dragon Gate. Mm. And all his peers that have came up with him have been, you know, won the Dream Gate Championship, but he never was able to, never got his opportunity. I mean, Lince Dorado almost died in a Chikara ring when he did that Shooting Star Press and was knocked out and had to get CPR and, you know, an insanely scary sight. So you could talk about that. I mean, even somebody like Drew Gulak, I mean, yeah, on the surface, a white Pennsylvania dude, not the most exciting person, but I mean, this is somebody that's toiled away on the indies for over a decade now. You know, probably certainly didn't think even, you know, 2-3 years ago he'd have a chance to be signed by WWE and working in front of these type of audiences. So it's a step up for him. Like, everybody here, if you go down this roster, seems to be like they have that story of, you know, they're looking for redemption or they're looking to become the guy. They're hungry. It's just you really got to just bring out the true personalities. And I mean, the work rate will follow that. And then I think also the fanfare, like, just let us know the actual people that are in the ring and just not make them either totally unrelatable characters or just kind of vanilla entities that you can't relate to at all. I mean, Gulak and Nice so far have been just kind of two guys that come out there in these 6-man tags and tag team matches, just like these enforcer type technical wrestlers to a degree, and there's no personality shown from either one of those guys at all. So it's just a matter of bringing up their strengths.
And as you know, someone who saw Drew Gulak last weekend live, not once but twice, he had people in the audience legitimately crying over leaving. Like, there were grown ass men and women crying at a wrestling show because of plain old Mr. Drew Gulak. So he's got something. Otherwise, he wouldn't be making it this far.
Right.
Well, other independents going on. I mentioned it a little bit earlier. Final Battle, big, huge show for Ring of Honor at the Hammerstein Ballroom. Finally returning to the Hammerstein Ballroom after having to really fight in what seemed like a cylinder for the last couple of years. A huge crowd at the ballroom on pay-per-view. I think maybe at the end we might let you shoot a little bit, Chad, about your thoughts about people's impressions about this show before it even happened. I really just wanted to go up and down really quick through the shows, just kind of match by match and get your impressions. Your first match, King, Titus, Coleman, formerly the Cabinet, evidently switched to the Rebellion really quickly. Didn't really show much of that on TV besides a quick coming out and yelling at Kevin and Steve Corino in a recent episode of TV. Going against the Motor City Machine Guns and Donovan Dijak all of a sudden pairing up with them. What were your thoughts on this match, Chad?
I thought this was a fun opener. I do think I'm more forgiving of the Cabinet than most. Not so much the gimmick, but I do think them as a trio work well together just in ring. And then them finally I mean, them saying kind of denouncing the cabinet gimmick and going with the rebellion, that was a little too inside baseball for me, mm-hmm. just in the way that was presented. But I do think that is a better, I guess, a presentation for them going forward is this rebellion. So it's kind of a strength, but the way they went about it was a little bit of a negative for me. This match overall, I mean, I would say, I guess, the biggest takeaway is Dijak. I thought he looked excellent in the match. He had the crowd kind of popping huge for his big moves. I think he, over the year, we've seen him go from a guy with just really raw talent that still would try to do, early in the year, he was a guy with huge raw talent, but when he would do some of these kind of springboard moves to the outside, they would look really sloppy and kind of not be hit exactly correctly. And now he's really kind of refined his style, dramatically improved in my eyes, and seems poised in 2017 to kind of be one of those big indie names that's sort of leading the charge for Ring of Honor and kind of positioned up in the upper mid card, challenging for a TV title and being a serious contender kind of in that level.
Yeah, there were a lot of people upset that he did not beat Bobby Fish earlier in the year for the TV title, but he's, you know, not been around that long.
No. Yeah.
I'd also say that the switch from Dijak away from Nana was done equally as strange as the cabinet switch to the Rebellion. As someone who watches the television shows, like, that was just not explained at all, except for an interview that the Machine Gun said that they were looking for talent to be honorable.
Yeah, I mean, the Machine Gun seemed to be trying to really recruit, I guess, a stable with Dijak, Leo Rush, formerly ACH, but not anymore. They're kind of recruiting a bunch of guys to come in. So I guess I don't really know how that'll play out eventually. But we'll see. It's kind of interesting for them to do. I've been happy with the Machine Guns in them in Ring of Honor this year. I think they've had a really kind of underrated year in ring, had some really good matches that not a lot of people have talked about. And even though they're not positioned as the top team, they're kind of in the mix and can shift up and down the card, and you can also split them and have two good singles matches if you need to fill out a show. So they're very versatile and two good assets to have on your roster.
And I always say this about Alex Shelley, always the coolest guy in the room. Like, it just has this just charisma about him that, like, man, I want to be that guy. Just humorous, well-spoken, just, you know, a handsome man, good outfit, you know, like, just different. And always wondered why he hasn't gotten, you know, once he's been in Japan, he's gotten a little bit more love, but always at, like, the top of the mid card, and never really pushed much higher than that.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same boat. Like, to me, Alex Shelley is Noam Dar, but actually can wrestle. So
he's a supernova.
Yeah, he's a supernova.
Next match, Silas Young, who has been toiling away the last few years in Ring of Honor, just the man who won't give up, getting a shot at Jushin Liger, and a little bit of a surprise win. You don't see Liger lose much when he comes to the United States.
Yeah, I thought this was a good win for Silas, really kind of helping him. He's another guy. I mean, he's kind of that same position. I mean, Ring of Honor is running a good many house shows, and so you've got to have matchups to kind of fill out these cards. I think that's sort of understated. I mean, they're doing a 1-hour TV every week. And then they're having their kind of six big pay-per-view events. But beyond that, I mean, they're running, I would say they ran, 30, 40 house shows this year. So that's a lot of house shows that you've got to fill out. And having Silas being positioned well is good, that, you know, he can challenge Adam Cole for the world title in that house show in Florida, and it doesn't seem that outlandish. And, you know, it's a good match where if you go to that house show, you don't feel cheated. that you saw that. So him picking up the win from Liger, I thought was a smart move. Again, kind of shows that, you know, the old talking point that anybody from New Japan automatically has to go over Ring of Honor talent doesn't hold too true anymore. Because now you have, you had Silas pinning Liger pretty decisively here. The match overall I thought was okay, not great. This was actually probably my worst match of the night.
Yeah, I agree.
But still was fair.
Yeah, it was, you know, like a 2.5 type star match.
Right,
I think I had mentioned to you, in my opinion, with friend of the program Beer City Bruiser apparently. Apparently he became friend of the program, and I was not aware.
Yeah, he. He rolled out there with Silas. I don't know if he got a appearance fee for what he contributed, but more power to him if he did. My boy, Beer City Bruiser.
And in the world's fastest get together as a team and break apart and have a blood feud of the year, Dalton Castle versus Colt Cabana. I do give Colt this. He looked great as a heel when he turned, and he did his best to be cocky and, you know, changing his theme music around. He did his best with this quick change to super fan favorite to evil clown or whatever he's supposed to be right now.
Yeah, I really enjoyed his character work here.
Mm-hmm.
I'll probably sound like a broken record, but this, again, like the cabinet to the rebellion, it's like the end result of this with Cabana as a heel, which I think suits him well, and Castle going over, which should help him because now he's beat, you know, RH legend Cabana. That, to me, is a success. How they got there was a little shaky for me. I know Brad has defended kind of them getting together and split up, but it did seem like to me a little bit of, hey, we're just gonna have these two guys team together for a little bit and now feud kind of in the Jericho AJ Styles vein. I mean, it was essentially that was what they did here, and that does kind of sit a little uneasy for me. They did team up 4 or 5 times, but no, I mean, as the match overall, I thought this was good. I did like Cabana's heel work, and it was nice seeing Castle get a win. And again, another person, you know, throw him up in the upper mid card, can have a feature match here or there. Certainly has a personality. He's insanely over with the Ring of Honor crowd. Him coming out on the Chariot, I thought was a nice touch. Kind of added a good bit of a gravitas to the whole event.
It's something you don't usually see in Ring of Honor either.
Right.
Kind of stuff.
It was almost like their version of a Triple H WrestleMania entrance to a degree. So that was good. So overall, this was a success. The match, I thought this match was good, not great.
Yeah, I agree. It left me wanting a little bit more, especially with the brutality of Colt's turn with the way he attacked Castle.
Yeah, I mean, they did have a bloody breakup, and then this was, no color here, which I guess I understand with what happened in the main event, but I guess this kind of booked him in a corner, because I don't think you wanted Cabana to go over here, but it did kind of feel like, oh, well, now the feud's already over. So this whole arc was pretty quick, where they got together in the beginning of September, and now it's done as a feud of them splitting up.
The question, too, is how much is Colt going to be sticking around at this point?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I did think Brad had a really good point in previewing the show that, I mean, Colt's been around for 20 shows this year. I know he's doing the Decade of Excellence tournament next year. With the TV, so I would expect that he would be around pretty frequently. Actually, it seems like kind of Ring of Honor's became his main gig to a degree. So I would say he's in for the long haul, at least for now.
And his goal has been the World Championship, and with what we'll talk about later, it can kind of fit right now to at least have that shot.
Yeah, he's a contender for sure.
Man, the next match, I think I'm not a big Cody Rhodes fan. I just he's never done much to me outside of you know, some of the stuff with his brother, the tag team. I know a lot of other people were more excited about this match and the match with Jay Lethal, and they proved to put on a decent match, but I think what was more exciting was post-match. You had, it was hard to tell at first. Rhodes kind of shoved Lethal and Todd Sinclair knocked heads. Rhodes went for the low blow and then finished him off. Is it the Crossroads?
Right.
Amazing that they can sometimes call him Rhodes, sometimes not call him Rhodes.
Yeah.
Randy totally liked the production botching his intro. But yeah, why don't you talk about especially the fallout of what was going on?
Yeah. I just quickly on the Rhodes thing, I think it's weird that it's like it's a graphic issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you just see his graphic, they just call him Cody or, you know, Cody R at Bola. But when he's in
that
the ring,
odd, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's oh, here's Cody Rhodes. So I still don't quite understand the legality of that. This match actually over-delivered for me. These are kind of two guys that both of them, for the most part, I'm kind of take them or leave them. If they're in there with somebody I'm really, you know, high on, I think they have a real good match. If they're not, it's usually disappointing. So the match being, I thought, was solidly good was kind of an over statement for me. I was impressed with that. But yeah, beyond that, I thought the finale and the post-match was where Cody really shined, because what we've seen so far of him on the indies has been a lot of kind of, you know, his list of going through guys, having a match, you know, good competitive match, we'll shake hands afterwards, blah, 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 thank you for having me, it's an honor to be on the indies, you know, take Polaroids with me in the ring when this is done. kind of that type of routine. So this was very exciting for me to see, and I thought the best he'd been presented by far since he'd left WWE, where he went on a rampage on the ringside area, tearing up tables, shoving people, gets into it with Carino, which was hilarious, and just getting legitimate heat, like really trolling the fans as he was leaving, and it was a sight to behold, and actually made me more excited for his dates coming up within the company. And I thought it was really good how they presented him. I guess, do we want to get in the spoiler of what was announced in Japan?
Yeah. I mean, it's happened, right?
Yeah, it's happened. So Adam Cole, or not Adam Cole, Kenny Omega, said he had a big announcement for Bullet Club, that in Japan, that announcement was Cody Rhodes is the new member of Bullet Club. Whether that carries over to Ring of Honor, I'm unsure of. But I will say, I kind of hope it doesn't, to be honest, because I kind of liked him on his own here as kind of, I think, a character of somebody thinking he's like too big of the promotion. Kind of works as a different type of heel character right now within this promotion, instead of, you know, him just coming out and yucking it up with the Young Bucks and Cole, if he is indeed Bullet Club in Ring of Honor.
Did you hear too, when Rhodes pushed down Carino, did you hear him shout out McGinn? I thought that was amazing, and I don't know how Dan got to Cody, but man, good on him.
A long-standing feud. Finally, some retribution for Dan there.
and Daniels and Frankie Kazarian. Not, you know, another quick, hey, all of a sudden we're faces and worried about honor, when Christopher Daniels' entire career in Ring of Honor has been about not following the code.
Yeah, I do think this one has been better built, though, because we had had them in the lead up to All-Star Extravaganza start to hint at, obeying the code of honor. Then we had that spectacular Daniels promo before the ladder match.
Yeah, and the post-ladder war where he's kind of questioning a lot of things. But you didn't really see that with Kazarian.
No, yeah, I mean, Kazarian kind of coming along for the ride is a little odd because it's mostly a Daniels thing. But I will say I'm more forgiving, I guess, of that, their kind of turn compared to, like, Castle and Cabana's whole arc.
And if it is true that Corino is leaving, that seat for Christopher Daniels.
I really want him to be the announcer. I think that would be good. I mean, to me, this is Chad's fantasy booking, but to me, the dream scenario, he wins the Decade of Excellence tournament. He challenges O'Reilly at the anniversary show, puts his career on the line, loses. And then, whatever he's doing backstage is great, and he also becomes the co-announcer.
Absolutely.
And that's his role. I mean, I think that would be just fantastic. It's kind of a last hurrah for his career.
Yeah, and then works with us a little bit more, too.
Yeah, there you go.
Come on, Ben Morse. Six-man tag match, another new addition to Ring of Honor. Promotion that's really had a lot of changes this year.
Right.
And here's again, you mentioned the New Japan. Always got to win, right? Well, you got one of the best wrestlers in the world, Kushida, who teaming with Lio Rush and Jay White, and his team goes down, not a surprise by any means, to the new kingdom of Taven, Vinnie Marcella, and TK O'Ryan. It was an interesting match. It felt like watching this match that the Rebellion match, they might want to, they're like, hey, we want to outshine that title match down the line, because I don't know if this for me held up a candle to that other match.
I like this. But it is interesting that Kushida's losing to Vinnie Marcella. That's odd. The New Kingdom, I think the hype, that was kind of a little bit of a victim of hype, because even when I read the TV spoilers, because Taven had been talking about it for months and months and months, and I read the TV spoilers of who it was and was just like, oh my god, just a complete kind of disappointment that these two kind of local young indie guys, good for them for getting a chance, but he'd been building it up. I was expecting John Cena and The Undertaker to run down there to be the new members of the Kingdom, the way he was presenting it. But overall, so far, their trios matches, I think they've gelled pretty well. They're still kind of trying to implement their triple team moves. So some of those are looking a little sloppy. Their finisher with the powerbomb, It's a little odd, but I'm actually kind of high on them going forward. I feel like there's some potential there. The other kind of mishmash team of Rush, Kushida, and White, I really enjoyed. I thought they were a lot of fun in this match and kind of brought the energy to help give the match a little bit of a spark. I mean, again, I didn't think this was anything outstanding, but for what it was, I thought this was another enjoyable match on a kind of a really solid, enjoyable undercard so far. The first five matches on this show, they're all decent to good.
Yeah, there's nothing bad on here. I did like the commentary, letting you know that, hey, the Kingdom has history together. That's why Taven picked them. They trained together. They're from the same area. So it's like, okay, well, this makes a little bit more sense now. But with Rush, White, and Kushida, it was implied, and I don't know if this was just a kayfabe type thing, that they had been training together a little bit, on the side to, when Kushida would be around to improve and work on some moves together and get down their timing.
Yeah, I was wondering if that was just like a throwaway line or if there's something more to that. That's something to keep an eye on, even, internationally, if something comes about from that.
All right, man, this match, had a ton of hype behind it. Some of the other ones. Will Ospreay, Marty Scurll, Dragon Lee, Triple Threat Match, Bobby Fish supposed to be there. Man, there was some scuttle like, oh, he's going to be, you know, this was on Twitter, like people, oh, this shows he's going to be leaving because he wasn't in the match. And his mother died for the, you know, for the love of God,
yeah,
Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
His mom died.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with contracts. Like, so it turned into a triple threat match. Carino called it an instant classic. I don't know what to call it. It was fun. I'll tell you that much. It was a lot of fun. I have not seen much. I've seen a lot more of Ospreay from his New Japan stuff, but I haven't been able to see much of Dragon Lee. And I haven't been able to watch as much British indies as I have. But for someone who has seen these men, how would you say it would compare to some of the other stuff they've done around the horn, especially like Ospreay and Scurll, who have been together a lot?
Yeah, this was like their showcase,
mm-hmm,
balls to the wall type match for all three. I would say this is, you know, we can perform some of the most high octane type moves that you'll see, and dazzle the crowd, really spectacular state of the art kind of sequences, and you got that there. I mean, for me, the absolute best stuff of each is when Ospreay actually does do some selling and has to change his high impact moves, or when Scurll is just a complete villain, or when Dragon Lee is kind of, he uses his high risk moves with a feud and kind of state of the art hatred, like in the Kamitachi stuff and CMLL. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. So that to me is the absolute best of them. But for this type of show where a lot of the people may not have seen them, or, you know, this was maybe only the second or third time you've seen them, I thought this kind of hit on all cylinders to a degree. I mean, I don't think it was a great match. I do the star rankings. I had this one at 3.75, but it felt like a match one. I thought that it was great that this match, even though it busted out a ton of moves and insane stuff, you were talking today in our chats about the where Ospreay goes from the mat to the floor on his feet.
Yeah, that was incredible.
It's just some of the stuff he does. I mean, there's that GIF from Bola Night One where him and Phoenix do the standing shooting star, or the standing Spanish fly on the top rope, and they both land on their feet in the ring. I mean, it's some of the stuff he does is like, dude, you're going to be dead in like 5 years. I mean, I don't know how he's going to be able to keep up this pace.
Right. Well, there's a move in England when he tagged against the Young Bucks, and he tried to block the Meltzer driver with a Hurricane Rana, and Matt just floated through. I think it was Matt. Yeah, Matt floated through and still did the move.
Yeah, yeah, he does. He basically does a springboard hurricanrana.
Times it perfectly
on the mat. Yeah, they did that. That was really interesting too. Just because in Bola Night 2, the big match that Meltzer gave 5 stars, he did an a kind of twist on that too, where he did the cutter that time, mm-hmm, where he springboarded, and he times that perfect. I don't see how he times that perfectly. I think that's the big differentiator for Ospreay, is his stuff just looks so graceful and amazing. Like with him flipping around and just doing his stuff, his body control can be ridiculous. I mean, this match to me felt like the perfect kind of popcorn summer movie type match, mm-hmm, where not a lot of substance, but just a ton of fun while it lasted. And it did make you really want to see more of these guys. Like I was left saying, yep, I want to see each three of these guys wrestle each other kind of in a round-robin system, and I can't wait. I mean, I think this clearly is going to be kind of a focal point of Ring of Honor next year, especially Scurll and Ospreay, because they have the contracts with Ring of Honor. They're going to be cornerstones of the promotion going forward.
It is probably my top... My pick for like the best thing that's happened in Ring of Honor this year is these last few months of the year really expanding their roster and utilizing their contacts with New Japan, and then by proxy CMLL, and then moving out to England as well, bringing all those together to kind of hedge their bets, not knowing where some of their top guys are going to be heading with more opportunities than, say, the WWE.
Yeah, I think to me, the signing of Ospreay and Scroll is the best thing in office Ring of Honor did this year, mm-hmm. because these are two guys. I mean, Ospreay was given a public play from WWN Live when Heyman, offered him the contract in England. I mean, that was an absolute public play. A hint, hint, nudge, nudge. Hey, you can go here, and you'll probably be you know where in a couple years. So for him to choose Ring of Honor over that was a big coup for Ring of Honor. Same for Scroll. I mean, I do think it was a good possibility that if Scroll hadn't signed with Ring of Honor, there's a chance he's the Evolve champion right now. When he was facing Timothy Thatcher in the summer, I mean, it seemed kind of poised that he was going to win the belt in that match, and I think that's right around the time he signed with Ring of Honor. So he was getting a big push with WWN Live, too. So for them to sign those two guys that were clearly plucked and pegged for big things in the Evolve and WWN Live system, I think was, a big accomplishment for Ring of Honor this year.
And another big accomplishment, another big signing, the Young Bucks, where we found out just this week, kind of a headline that they are sticking around for another 2 years with New Japan and Ring of Honor, being able to still wrestle in PWG and European dates that don't interfere, and getting a huge raise and a little bit of creative control as well.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I know that, I guess the talk was, they wanted to be involved in, I guess, more feuds type mm-hmm. stuff, which, fine by me. The Young Bucks are such a love-hate team, Steve, and they've been a love-hate team for me personally. I know you love them. But I've been on a Young Bucks kick this year. I've really kind of, just embraced their gimmick, so to speak. Love kind of their hustle on the Twitter and the merchandise and stuff like that. And I think in ring at the beginning of the year, they felt a little bit kind of just going through the motions and stuff like that. But if you look at the last few months they've had in Ring of Honor and New Japan, it's an impressive array of matches, both in those six mans with Kenny Omega, the Ghostbuster six man, which I thought was just a ton of fun. Also, the power struggle, and then all their matches that they've had in Ring of Honor have been, the ladder match was great, and then the match we can transition in here with the Briscoes. Another really excellent match. I rewatched this one today, as I told you, and this is where I get, anal on my rating. So I love the match, but I didn't like that they kicked straight out of the J Driller.
That was shocking. And not just the J Driller,
and the Froggy Bow combo. Yeah,
I was shocked at that.
I kind of wish that had been a save,
right?
Because they did do the save on the Meltzer driver, the Briscoes. There was a save there. It wasn't a straight kick out, mm-hmm. which I'm fine with. So that kind of really just, I don't know, that about that match makes me give it a very picky rating. I know a 3.75 stars or 2, but I would go out of my way to see this match because just, I thought great energy from both guys, from all four guys. Some sick moves. The final with the super kicks.
Unbelievable.
I thought that was excellent. Just a great and kudos to the Briscoes too. I mean, these guys are bulletproof in Ring of Honor. They're Ring of Honor legends. You know, and this was a type of finish. I don't know who came up with this finish, but in some ways, the way it sounds, it's like we're just going to super kick you 10 to 15 times to kill you. It can sound like, oh, that's overkill, and that's putting the Young Bucks over too much. But in the way it presented, I actually think it helped the Briscoes, you know, because they took it like men, and, you know, they wouldn't back down, and, you know, they kind of took their medicine and accepted their fate and took all these super kicks and finally got pinned. Really memorable stuff. I mean, I think that'll stay with me for years to come where I can recall that finish.
Yeah, I was concerned at first with the match because it seemed like a paint by number, Young Bucks doing all their, you know, their basic regular. I mean, for them, basic is a lot better than other guys in terms of, you know, gymnastics type work.
Right.
Same with the Briscoes going through their regular stuff. And then when, you know, the finish, I think what made it so much more memorable for me is that in a lot of your New Japan matches, and Ring of Honor's kind of co-opted this as well, there'll be this fighting spirit, like stand up after a big move or kick out at one, and then there'll be one more move that kills the guy off. Whereas this, they each did their super finisher, each, you know, kicked out or were saved. The Bucks gave him a couple super kicks, and then they both, I don't remember if they flicked him off or they just said, keep bringing it. And
right.
Instead of just giving the one, it wasn't the typical Young Bucks cheesy comedic super kick where Carino, these were like straight kicks to the face while the Briscoes were on their knees in rapid succession. And it looked brutal.
Yeah. Today, I wanted to make sure and look at that. You know, I sometimes looking behind the curtain, right? Mm-hmm. So, and these super kicks, I wanted to see if there was some thigh slapping mm-hmm. or leg slapping. I could not see it. So, the sound they were making was the boot hitting the chin.
Right.
Either that or they were doing it in a severe way. And I mean, you know, I didn't do this frame by frame, like it's a Puda file, but
nice reference.
Yeah, but
back and to the left, back and to the left.
Right. but I was impressed with that. I mean, it was brutal. It looked brutal on the second watch. So that was insane. Again, kudos to the Briscoes for taking that.
Yeah. One kind of Jay Briscoe's haircut, man. I don't know what was going on with that.
Yeah, he kind of looked like he had a, I don't even know what.
It
almost looked like a rug on top.
Yeah, it was like a bowl cut with a little triangle in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was something.
Yeah, that was a misfire that came on all.
Yeah. And winning is what Kyle O'Reilly did. And this was the way the story was meant to go.
Right.
For people who complain of not having long-term booking, this was a 6-year build.
Yeah.
Definitely a build for the last year and a half where it kicked into high gear. But I really, since not just Future Shock breaking up, but where really Adam Cole made it the big step, was that match in the same building against O'Reilly where he got busted open, lost his tooth, and was just a disgusting bloody mess. I believe that was 2010 final battle? 2011?
Maybe 2011, I think.
Yeah. And here we are 5 years later. Kyle O'Reilly defeated Adam Cole. It was a no DQ match. I don't remember that being set up before the show. They did bring it up as the match started.
Right. Yeah, it was kind of tacked on.
Yeah, and the way that the no DQ match went, there was some fun stuff in there. At times it felt like almost like a TNA ECW era hardcore match, you know, with the thumbtacks and when they brought out the garbage can, I'm like, oh, God, please don't bring out a kendo stick and have him smash the garbage can while it's on his head. But still, you know, O'Reilly bringing his anger, both men busted open, which is a rarity in a Ring of Honor card, and you can almost hear Nigel cursing under his breath that happened. Right. O'Reilly eventually, after getting suplexed or powerbombed into the thumbtacks, O'Reilly caught Cole in the armbreaker and made him tap out, becoming the champion.
Yeah. So this was my match of the night. Rewatching. Mm-hmm. I went 4 stars on this match.
Yeah, it seems all right.
They did have the match at Supercard of Honor Night 2 earlier this year that I thought was better than this match.
Yes.
I actually think the match at Final Battle last year may have been slightly better than this match too. But I just thought the culmination of everything here. I mean, to me, this kind of match lives and dies with how invested you are with both of these guys. And I know both of these guys aren't everyone's cup of tea. O'Reilly, it's kind of on the personality side. With Cole, it's on the wrestling side.
Sure.
So it's kind of weird how they are kind of parallel with each other, where one strength is the other weakness. But I enjoyed some of the moments in this match. I really liked the moment where O'Reilly gets suplexed and then hulks up and then falls out of the ring. Yes. With the blood loss. I thought that was actually a great spot. Even though they did go to the garbage style variety that you touched on with the tags, the trash can, and the tables, I thought they had enough kind of hatred and violence to make it seem like a feud where they were both trying to win the match instead of a stunt show, which I appreciated. And, you know, overall, I mean, no, Kyle O'Reilly's the champion, and he's deserving. I mean, he's been there. He's done his time, and I felt very happy for him to win the title. I don't quite know how big of a champion or how good of a champion he'll be going forward, but I guess that's an argument for the future. And for the present, like you said, this was the right story to tell.
I agree. And the one thing I wanted to end with here, and I purposely left it out, it was the post-match. And I have one more point with the O'Reilly match, actually, too, before we go on. Do you think that they had to cut a little bit out of that match? I watched the show on the website, and it went 2 hours, 59 minutes, and 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And actually kind of cut out, the video cut out on there after the replay when you saw O'Reilly in the ring. They didn't even have a chance to, like, give, you know, like your N-Shy run or whatever.
Right.
Do you think that could have been something that...
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, when they went into the ring, you know, it was like 11:30 my time.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew, yeah, they only had about 30 minutes. So you weren't getting a 28 to 32 minute kind of epic, you know, traditional strong style wrestling match that you might think with these two. I mean, I know 3 hours is a pretty long show as is. I might have liked it if they could have stretched it to 3.5 hours. I am kind of always amazed at how well they time those pay-per-views, because almost all of the Ring of Honor pay-per-views, I mean, it's going 2 hours and 56 minutes plus. So they're usually pretty close to on the verge of their pay-per-view window and somehow still kind of wrap it up. They haven't had the Halloween Havoc 1998 moment yet, thankfully. So that's good. Yeah, it's possible they could have had to cut a couple minutes for something else that went long earlier.
Okay, and as I was saying, the thing that I really wanted to talk about, which shocked everybody, post Young Bucks Briscoe's match, and we can kind of end with this with all of us talking about it. We can bring Nate and Glenn back in. Matt Hardy, broken Matt Hardy, appears on the screen and says they are coming to Ring of Honor. They are going to make the Bucks of Youth and the Rednecks obsolete. I believe there were some deletes chanted. How shocked were you guys when you heard about this? And I don't know if we want to talk about what happened on the tapings as well, but this story went on a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear this is a feud going forward. I mean, for me personally, I was pretty blown away by this, just because TNA and Ring of Honor have not been, I guess, on the friendliest of terms lately, or really for a while like now. 04. Yeah, I think 2006 when they really pulled like Joe and AJ and the guys. So seeing this here, you know, if anybody that would have made a return to Ring of Honor on this night, Hardy would have been, I guess, a surprise for me. I mean, it was just a big surprise for me to see it. Really exciting because I do think like he's kind of the end person right now, still is. I mean, he's kind of the end character of 2016, and that should carry over to 2017 with the Bucks. Now, I guess the word going around is that this was kind of the Young Bucks creation to get this, I guess, brokered.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I mean, them, if this is them with more creative control, then I'm all for it because I think this is fantastic. And I guess we can say they're running the match WrestleMania weekend between the Young Bucks and the Hardy Boys. And that's the type of match that I think, you know, will be a great attraction if you're coming down there WrestleMania weekend. And I can't remember if they're running the Friday or the Saturday. I think they are running the Saturday, which goes head-to-head with NXT. So they really had to give something to kind of dangle that carrot. And to me, Young Bucks versus Hardy Boys is exactly what you need to draw fans in.
Brother Nate, what's your thought? I mean, what was your immediate reaction? And what do you think this might mean going forward with TNA and ROH? I mean, you got Cody wrestling for both.
Right.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought that, you know, obviously it was a surprise. We've seen the breadcrumbs on TNA, at least from their end of the, at least from the Hardys. End of the deal several times through the various vignettes, you know, talking about the spot monkey addiction going on in the industry and bringing up the Bucks of Youth on a couple occasions. I thought it was really great. The only small quibble I have is that I wish Broken Matt would have just paused a little bit before he started talking because you missed the first part. Mm-hmm. But, it's up online, and it's just great. In terms of the actual business of this, I think one of the things that makes this easier to palate for both sides than in years past is the fact that they now have a common ally, and that's Anthem Sports, who is the parent company of the Fight Network, which airs both shows. So from that perspective, it makes sense for Anthem to be sitting in there in the boardroom with the Hardys and TNA and the Young Bucks and the ROH contingent and saying, hey, you know, this works for everybody. You know, there's money to be made for everybody here. I'm not sure how much integration we're going to see on Impact or even on the ROH weekly shows, but I do think that this has the potential to be something really cool. You know, I think apart from anything that's going on in the WWE or New Japan or wherever you want to point to, the freshest thing this year, certainly the thing that's been the most talked about, has been what the Hardys have done with Final Deletion and the spinoffs. And you know, we've got another one coming up this week, which should be interesting because they're taking over the whole show. So it just makes sense, and I think it's going to be a really cool thing for the fans if they can pull this thing off.
And it's interesting now that, you know, back in the day, we were talking about 2006, where Ring of Honor really needed TNA a lot more than TNA needed Ring of Honor.
Yep.
Here we are in the reverse, where it feels like, you know, TNA needs Ring of Honor a little bit more. You know, TNA ran the Hammerstein Ballroom, and they had a heck of a time filling that place, and they were giving tickets away left and right and still didn't fill it. And Ring of Honor filled it up, sold the place out, and it was, like I said before, it was quite loud and rambunctious. Glenn, I want to end with you because you are a man. You are a man who studies. You are really just a genius, an academic who has studied Broken Matt, Brother Nero. So I really would like to get your thoughts on this as you studied, as you broke down the Broken Matt.
You know, I very badly hope that they got this deal done in time to get the Bucks of Youth into Apocalypto. I don't know, but we're going to see. The thing that has marked this entire era of Broken Brilliance for me is the sort of metatextual play with the tropes of wrestling that Broken Matt and Brother Nero and everyone else has done, and the sort of postmodern eye with which they're viewing a lot of these things. And I think from the limited exposure that I've had to them, that the Young Bucks kind of get that perspective and kind of feel that vibe and can kind of play with certain tropes of wrestling in a postmodern way, in a way that kind of engages in and stands apart from a lot of the tropes that they're using. So I think that as artists, they're very highly compatible, and that is something that should be very exciting when they get together. So I'm excited. That's all.
And just like clotheslines and headlines, where we can bring people from around the wrestling spectrum, like a Chad Campbell, bring him into our hearts. We can throw Justin a birthday party, give him a break from the podcasting game, and bring in our friend Glenn. This wrestling, it can do the same. We can come together, bring the Broken Ones, bring the Bucks of Youth, hopefully bring Senor Benjamin, bring Baby Maxwell, the King, and just, you know, bring ourselves together in this time of chaos in the world. This is what we need. Thank you, Broken Matt. We will take a final break here. Come back, wrap things up. Clotheslines and Headlines, episode 13. Chad, thank you for coming with us. We'll probably bring you back again as we get to January 4th, another big wrestling day.
Yeah, I'm excited. Wrestle Kingdom's coming up, so I will join you guys at that time. Thanks a lot.
No problem. We'll talk to you soon, and we will be right back.
PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
When you want your cruiserweight analysis, you go to CNH. When you want your Ring of Honor analysis, you go to CNH. When you want your WWE pay-per-view recap, you go to CNH. I badly hope that people in other parts of the country got those ads too, and I'm not just making jokes that nobody gets, although that would not be foreign to my experience. Anyway, it is time for us to wrap up and get out of here. We have taken up enough of your time, I think. Thank you so much for being with us. Let's get to our plugs, other things we're doing online, other things we want to point people to. Brother Nate, what have you got going on that the people need to hear?
Oh, I got so much going on. We might be here another hour and a half. but real quick, I just want to let the folks know out there that the Sheedy nominees are up. So, Place to Be Nation is well represented, so go out there and cast a vote for the good guys. Let's see. In terms of what I've got specifically, other than Clotheslines and Headlines, which you can catch me on every 2 weeks, I have a new episode of the Kings of Sport dropping this week, myself and Brother Marcus, talking all things football, whether it's in the NFL or the college playoff scenario or fantasy football. So That's the Kings of Sport. You can also check out my Luke Cage podcast, Always Forward. We dropped a new episode this week. We are up to episode 6, so we're going episode by episode reviewing the great Netflix series, which was announced this week that it would be renewed for a second season. So I guess that means I've got more podcast work to do in the future. And if you just want to talk to me, you can hit me up on Twitter at @NMOZAIK, at Nate Mosaic. And in the words of Russell Simmons from Def Comedy Jam, thank y'all for coming out. God bless you. Good night.
All right, Steve, I know some of the things you've got to plug, so, 'cause we're together on this one, but what have you got that the people need to hear?
We have been busy together, Glenn. Besides this, we just had the latest Rank and File, which is Jordan Duncan's show, drop, where we went back a year later and talked about our favorite wrestlers, not the best wrestlers, our favorite wrestlers of 2016. I was also on the new WCW pod.
Plenty of James Ellsworth talking that show?
James Ellsworth, I think, was number 11. I think there's some surprises on there. most notably, the fact that Kota Ibushi was not on my list because our other podcasts that we've been doing, the live watch, we went away from watching Raws and Nitros, and we've started watching DDT campsite shows. And Kota Ibushi, we have learned over 2 episodes that he is a reprehensible, just horrible, miserable human being. You'll have to catch the second one, which should be dropping this week on Friday, I believe. And one more podcast that's dropping. It's just all wrestling for me right now, and I need a break. Talked WCW Cruiserweights, just like I talked Cruiserweights tonight. Went back through the history of WCW Cruiserweights with Andy Helene, Tim Capel, some of my old friends from the CWO blog days, and that is Survey Says, I believe, episode 4. I'm also parenting currently, not doing the greatest job, and I got another job as well too. I occasionally go to the comic book store, and I'll be taking a nap tomorrow afternoon.
Well, listeners, if you would like to
get... say real quick though, Glenn, if you need help with that small business, we know somebody.
Yes, we only got 5 employees, and we are entrepreneurs. So I'm going to be making a phone call. I got the red bat phone that goes directly to the Trump Tower in New York City.
Well, listeners, we've come full circle here on the CNH.
Just hear the deflation in his voice when we brought that back around.
Glenn is just as deflated at the end as he was in the beginning.
Symmetry.
I think I need a nap now. I need a nap for several years. thank you very much, Steve. Thank you very much, Brother Nate. We here at Clotheslines and Headlines will be back in 2 weeks' time to bring all this analysis right back around. Until then, listen to the other shows that everyone mentioned. I, of course, am the host of the Glenn Butler Podcast, Our Spectacular, of which you can find the archives at place3nation.com. I hope to be bringing it back soon. I make no promises. but we will try. Thank you very much, listeners, and good night, folks.
Happy birthday, JR. Go find Fudgy. When I pull up out front, you see the Benz on dub. When I roll 20 deep, it's 29s in the club. Niggas heard I fuck with Dre, now they wanna show me love. When you sell like Eminem and the Hulk, they wanna fuck. But homie, ain't nothing changed, hold down, G's up. I see exhibit in the cut, ain't nigga roll that weed up. If you watch how I move, you mistake before I play up here. Been hit with a few shells, but I don't walk with a limp. In the hood, in the lady, saying 50, you hot. They like me, I want them to love me like they love pop. But holla in New York, niggas to tell you I'm local. When you're playing it to put the rap game in the choke. Oh, I'm fully focused, man. My money on my mind. Got a meal out the deal and I'm still on the grind. Now shorty say she feeling my style, she feeling my flow. A girl from Woody, they buy and they ready to go. I'm in the club, bottle full of bub. Look, mommy, I got the head sippy in the take of drugs. I'm in the having sex, I ain't into making love. So come give me a hug, you're in the getting rough.